What I say this morning will be very brief, and I must say that it will be highly personal, but I believe that it reflects surely the experience of tens of millions of Americans whose lives have been affected by the lives of May and Walter Reuther. None of us can speak of May and Walter Reuther without emotion and without the deepest gratitude. A friend of mine once said that the purpose of a free society is to produce great individuals. And in producing May and Walter Reuther, this society justified itself many times over. When we speak of them as typical Americans, we flatter ourselves. They were the kind of Americans we would all like to be. They were the good, vital, generous, loving people that many of us strive to be and never quite are. They strengthened us. They renewed our faith. They thought better of us than we thought of ourselves, and by thinking so, made us better people. It's a bitter thing to lose them now when we need them so much. But we can serve their memory best by being the kind of people that they wanted us to be. Thank you.
I come to extend my personal sympathy and that of my family to the families of May and Walter Reuther, to their friends and associates and members of the UAW. Walter Reuther was to black people no mere remote headline personality. For blacks, he was preeminently the most widely known and respected white labor leader in the nation. The secret of his success with blacks was that he was there in person when the storm clouds were thick. We remember him in Montgomery. He was at Birmingham. He marched with us in Selma and Jackson, Mississippi, and Washington. And he was in Memphis. Only yesterday, there he was once more in Charleston, South Carolina. The leader of 1.5 million workers, giving personal support to a strike of only 400 black women. Black America needs more than it gets from the American labor movement. But it knows that the national labor leader who set an example for all of his colleagues was Walter Reuther. He was a big man, so of course he had enemies and detractors. He had the courage to be with the minority when it was right. He was counted among the opponents of the war in Vietnam in the lonely days. In 1963, it is now almost forgotten that the Civil Rights March on Washington could not get major official labor support. That historic demonstration, now universally respected, was then considered to be dangerous. But Walter Reuther and UAW were there, not with token representation, but in ranks of tens of thousands, and led by Walter Reuther personally. He was a simple man in his personal life, a rare quality in these flamboyant times. Surely the greatest credit must be given to his wife, who shared his rejection of conspicuous consumption. But if his ways were simple, his ideas were grand. Without trying to be more than a dedicated labor leader, he became a national and international leader. He aroused the imagination of millions, surpassing in respect and affection corporate executives, generals of armies, and politicians in high places. We shall all miss him because we are all better off, black and white, as beneficiaries of his creative life. Walter Reuther did not have to strain to identify with issues that concern black people. They were the issues of his life work: decent annual wages, pensions, unemployment insurance, universal health insurance, political representation, and above all, equality and dignity for working people and a peaceful world. Only a few weeks ago, speaking to the UAW convention, I talked about the social leadership and broader vision of social justice Walter Reuther and the UAW brought to the labor movement. I said our nation was in desperate need of a pioneering spirit for radical reform. Black people, I felt, were eager to join in a crusade to achieve a society of human decency. And one of the great levers of power was in the hands of the United Auto Workers. I warned that divided, neither black nor white working people could win. Deluded by myths and prejudices, we could fail, but united, we could put this nation together, restore social sanity, inspire hope, and achieve the interracial harmony my husband always believed to be possible. At that time, I asked that such a crusade be a memorial to Martin Luther King. Today, plunged into more sorrow, I ask that you build a memorial of social justice in our daily lives for your own Walter Reuther, as well as Martin Luther King, Jr. A GM executive bargaining with Walter Reuther once asked him scornfully, "Is the UAW fighting the fight of the whole world?" I think this is not a bad epitaph for a man. He spent his life fighting the fight of the whole world.
All the civilized world knew Walter Reuther as one of the most powerful figures in the history of organized labor. I knew May and Walter Reuther as devoted, loyal, and proud parents of their two daughters, Linda and Lisa. Those who make the laws of these United States knew Walter Reuther as an eloquent and effective spokesman for ever more humane and adequate legislation in the broad area of human welfare. I knew May and Walter Reuther as staunch and consistent friends of Oakland University, dedicated to helping build this young institution into a major university for the benefit of education in general, but for their community in particular. The power structure of the nation knew Walter Reuther as a leading and vigorous champion of programs to improve the quality of the environment in which we all live and work. I knew May and Walter Reuther as the organizers of a community campaign to clean up picturesque Paint Creek, which encircled their simple home, so the neighborhood could enjoy today and tomorrow the natural beauty of that little stream. The political establishment knew Walter Reuther as an articulate, dynamic, and persuasive political force whose influence could affect in a major way the outcome of national elections. I knew May and Walter Reuther as effective members of the Rochester Parent Teachers Association, working for better schools for their children and for their neighbors' children. The concerned leaders of the nation, of the world, knew Walter Reuther as the leader of a persistent and determined battle for basic human rights, with the goal of achieving a minimum level of dignity for all mankind. I knew May and Walter Reuther as early and unwavering colleagues in the establishment of the Meadowbrook Music Festival and the Meadowbrook Theater, so their people too could share in the riches and the beauty and the dignity of the arts. The leaders of industry knew Walter Reuther in the heat of the bargaining room, where he labored with dramatic effectiveness to better the conditions of existence for all those whom he represented. I knew May and Walter Reuther in the warm glow of their gaily decorated home at the Christmas season, where we exchanged simple gifts, Texas pecans from our family, Grandmother Reuther's homemade wine from theirs. I, too, knew Walter Reuther as a leader of enormous power and influence and impact in the world. But much more importantly, I had the rich privilege of knowing May and Walter Reuther as parents, as neighbors, as people. I have lost personal friends. So too have the poor and the disadvantaged all over the world. I have been enriched because of their existence. So too has the human race. I shall miss them sorely. So too shall all mankind.
Thank you. Many here no doubt had their first contact with Walter Reuther in his struggle for justice for workers in America. Many don't, no doubt, walked picket lines with him in strikes through the years. But for many in my generation, our most direct contact with him was in the struggle for social justice. And I first walked a picket line with him in August of 1963 in the Civil Rights March, which he was so instrumental in forming and shaping and making a success. I came to know him not in bargaining sessions or as the recipient of the consequences of those bargaining sessions, but in the struggle for peace in Vietnam. At a time when students and workers were preparing to fight in the streets of New York, the strong, clear voice of Walter Reuther provided another voice and another vision, a vision of peace and of justice. But his life was much more than these visions of a just world at peace. They had substance, and I saw that's the substance of that dream of Walter Reuther's. In the United Auto Workers Center for Continuing Education at Black Lake, Michigan, I was privileged to attend an executive board meeting there, and after meeting late one night with his executive board, long into the night, discussing the United Auto Workers' endorsement of the October 15th moratorium, Walter Reuther was up early in the morning, and we walked together through the center. As he walked out of the breakfast room, his step lightened, and his eyes brightened, and he began to tell me of his dream for the center. He walked by the lake, and he talked about paths where families could walk among the trees. As he came to the first set of buildings, he showed me the child care centers, which would make it possible for a man and his wife to spend time together with no worries about their children. As we came to the next set of buildings, he pointed out the rooms where classes would meet, and the best of America could come to share their talents and skills and ideas with others. And then we walked through the woods, and he showed me which trees he personally had marked to be saved and which would be cleared so that the sunlight could reach those who walked on the paths below. And as we walked through the woods, I thought of those many who would follow in those footsteps. And it was only then that the scope of Walter Reuther's dream was clear. He envisioned not simply a world where racial justice, human justice, and economic justice are true in the abstract, but a world in which he knew that economic justice was only the first step in making life livable. He also dreamed of a world in which men could walk at peace with themselves and with nature, a world in which young people and old people, black and white, students and workers could share, a world of peace and justice because men were at peace with themselves, as he was. At this critical time in America's history, we will all miss that voice and that vision. We need men to speak for America who believe, as Walter Reuther did, that it is possible to work together to make peace. We need men to speak for America who believe, as Walter Reuther did, that it is possible for men of different ages, classes, colors, economic backgrounds, to live together in harmony. We need men to help pull our wounded and divided country back together again. And we will miss Walter Reuther in that struggle. But he has left for us footsteps that lead in that direction. And while we cannot match his stride or pace, we can follow the direction which he has set toward that nation of justice and peace of which he dreamed. And insofar as we have the courage and the strength to follow those steps, we will create the nation of which he dreamed, and we create the legacy which he would have wanted. It is my prayer of my generation and of others that we may have that strength and that courage to follow those footsteps.
When the dire and dreadful news came to me, the words of Chaim Nachman Bialik, the poet of the Hebrew Renaissance, flashed before my mind's eye. Haya ha'ish uru einenu od, kodem zemano met ha'ish hazeh, b'shirat chayov be'emtso nifsaka. There was a man, and behold, he is no more. Before his time, he was taken away, and the song of his life was interrupted. And now we are engaged in launching his tradition. In a sense, this memorial service is the birthday of his immortality. We, his mourners, begin today to build upon the tradition which his life's work so firmly founded, and thus we may convert a part of the leaden stuff of grief which weighs upon our hearts into the gold of memory and transmute our common sorrow into the ideals and acts which gave purpose and direction to his life and placed him among the dozen men of our generation who engraved the seal of their convictions and their character on the pattern of our national, yea, and of our international life. Walter was a prophetic environmentalist. 45 years ago, his quick and ardent spirit spotted the areas of politics in our industrial, the areas of pollution in our industrial, political, and social order. He saw that the working man had become a hand, often a poorly paid hand. He saw the machine and its owner extract the pound energy of that hand and ignore the mind and the heart that made it human. Walter Reuther insisted that the magnates of industry recognize the human factors in that abstract cost item which they and their computers designated as labor costs. His travels in Europe and Russia when still a young man convinced him that the assembly line was irreversible. Man could no longer return to the hand plow and the horse and buggy. The task before us, he often reminded us, was to humanize the machine, make it our servant and not our master. Tenacious, even dogmatic in his ultimate goals, he was supple and flexible enough to follow the changing patterns of the interplay of man and machine, of ownership and management. As corporations proliferated and pyramided, he brooded over the ever more subtle and complicated interplay of management and labor, of government and consumer. He was among the first to recognize that moment when automation made quantitative change qualitative, speeded evolution into revolution, and therefore demanded an entirely new orientation in determining the just due of management and labor in the division of the industrial profit. In this agonizing reappraisal, Walter Reuther gave the world of labor and of the consumer unfailing and perceptive leadership. When one adds to his many brilliant expositions of the good society, which might be possible, he dreamed, through the viable interaction of a free enterprise economy in a social welfare state, when I say one adds to these glorious visionary messages that he gave, like Amos did in Tekoa, such creative innovations as supplementary unemployment benefits, the guaranteed annual wage, retirement and sickness insurance, yes, and the Public Review Board, which I am honored to serve because he was so sure and so completely at home in the conviction that labor was innately democratic and right and just, that he was willing to put the decisions of his executive board, under the scrutiny of an independent board. I say when one adds these innovative techniques to the glorious contour of his vision, one can see the entire lineament of a society where men can be unto their fellow men friends. In my tradition, dear friends, we are bidden to take toll of death by seeking instruction from it. We ask ourselves, what were the sources of his incredible energy, his unyielding will, his dauntless courage, his passionate loyalty to his ideals? There was his father, Valentin, and mother, Uther, whose Protestant socialism and evangelical humanism early informed the hearts and minds of all the Uther children and served as a spiritual springboard from which they plunged into so many of the crucial issues involving the betterment of man and his society. There was the constant support and warm-hearted partnership of May, who comforted and counseled him through the myriad crises of their public life, and who added a note of benign and beautiful grace to all our family union gatherings. Her descent from the Deborahs and Esthers of the Bible gave her a profound understanding of the agonies and the ecstasies of the prophetic vocation. They were together in life and now are together in death. Our hearts go out to Linda and Lisa. They have shared their parents with all the dispossessed children of our land. Would that we could share their grief as generously as they have shared their parents' love for us. There were moments, I'm sure it is familiar to so many of us that were near and dear to him. I say there were moments in the past several years when violence became the general mood of our time, when our government became more deeply mired in a futile and immoral war, when the powers and potentates of America showed themselves to be men who think a little but chiefly forget, when friends and colleagues in the labor world sometimes could not hear the still small voice of conscience nor the rolling of that distant drum. Then Walter turned more and more to thoughts of his Camelot, his Gan Eden, his Garden of Eden, the beautiful city he was building on Black Lake, where the UAW family might escape the harsh pressures of our city, and in a congenial and beautiful setting, find a Sabbath for their souls. Take counsel with one another. Sit at the feet of the wise and learned men. Renew their spirits that they might return with a clearer vision and steadfast strength to the workaday world and rebuild it closer to the heart's desire. As Moses brought the people of Israel to the promised land and was himself denied entrance to it, though he glimpsed it from afar, so Walter Reuther was denied by an act of fate the personal enjoyment of this most precious dream. He enters instead that luminous land, which, like the space between the air and the jet wing, is the radiance of his memory in our hearts. Grateful for all he meant to us, and loyal to the values of his bone and flesh of his flesh, we shall be his surrogates in the warm valley of life. And by assuming the burdens he so gallantly bore, fighting for the causes he so bravely led, assure his immortality and bind him in the cluster of eternal life. Amen.